this is Josh.
And this is Michelle.
And this is Little Bandology, episode 8. We've made it to 8.
Nice.
I read somewhere that in order for a podcast to
really take off,
yeah, it has to get to 8 episodes.
So here we are.
So here we are at number 8. Episodes. So look out, people. So in this episode, we're going to talk about how we approach teaching our beginners to teach themselves.
Right.
In regards to new music. But before we do that, something that we're about to start getting into is we're going to start coming up with videos for our Facebook page out of sort of request
from our Midwest clinic.
The first video we're going to put out, and we're going to record it, I think this is a Saturday.
Yeah, today is Saturday.
We're going to go to work over the holiday on Monday, and we're going to shoot a video over how we teach our beginners to count rhythm.
Hopefully from our new band hall.
Yes.
That would be really cool.
They're supposed to have our new band hall finished, so we're going to go investigate and do some other work. I mean, there's things we need to do. We leave on a band trip to Florida on January the 2nd. Which has had its ups and downs in preparing for.
Right.
It's a little bit more difficult than it normally has been, but we hop on the charter bus to head to Florida, 2 days at Disney World, 2 days at Universal, with a workshop at Universal with almost 100 people.
Right. It's the most people we've taken on a band trip since we've been at Beckville, which is kind of crazy.
53 band students, and the rest are adults or family
which
members.
Which is over 75% of the kids going.
64 in our band program. So that's great. It's a fantastic representation of our band students, and something that not a lot of kids get to do.
Right, especially in Beckville. These kids don't really get much farther
than the edge of Panola County sometimes.
Yeah, maybe Gregg County, one county away.
Wherever we travel on our playoff games.
Right.
That's the big one. And that's why the our Austin trip every year for State Solo Ensemble is
such always a really
deal.
Big deal. Yeah.
That's or
the
student's favorite trip.
The Waco trip for State Marching Contest.
Oh, my
contest
gosh, yeah.
Is a big
and
deal.
Stay in a hotel. A lot of kids have never done that before. They enjoy that kind of stuff. Now, my favorite story about taking kids on a trip is I remember when I taught at Carlisle. And granted, this is where I grew up. This is the mentality of some of the people in the town. I had a student asked if the hotels had bathrooms in them.
Right. Are there going to be bathrooms in our rooms?
Yeah. And I remember just stopping for a minute and going, wow, yeah, this is where we are. This is where we are. And I never did ask if they thought it was like a communal situation or.
Right. Like maybe they had been to band camp and.
Maybe. You know, no, this kid, there's no way this kid went to band camp.
I don't know.
I remember thinking, I wonder, does that family have an outhouse still? That's where I was thinking. I mean, I'm pretty sure they had indoor plumbing.
Surely.
So that was the big ha-ha at that time. But anyway, we're going up to the band hall on Monday. We're going to do some recording in addition to just getting things ready for our trip.
And getting
for our move into our new band hall. And that may be an episode all itself is moving band halls because we've had several friends that have their bands have moved band halls.
Well, this will be my second time to do it.
Yeah. Michelle did it when she was at Carthage. They built a really, really nice high school band hall in Carthage.
Yes.
And then didn't finish the acoustics.
Right. And so that was a huge thing. And of course, we moved in the spring. So we're getting ready for concert contest. And the acoustics were terrible in the room. And so that was just a whole mess. Trying to get something in there so that we could still rehearse and hear our band properly. It did finally get worked out, I think. But
did you guys hang uniforms?
Is that no?
Like you hang uniforms on the cubbies?
That may have been very, very early in the process.
Because I've heard of bands doing that.
But that's because that happened. I've been very, very highly worried about the acoustics in our new band hall at Beckville.
And the first time we went in. And there was some stuff in there, but we clapped and it was a 5 second delay.
Yes,
a
so
six
that
second
you could
delay.
Hear the clap for 5 seconds after the clap. And I was like, oh no.
Now, this
is
was
not
without,
good.
This was without any soundproofing whatsoever.
Right.
And they said, oh no, it's fine. It's fine. And to give you a visual of what you might expect, if you look straight up, you see the roof.
Right.
Like you see metal.
So there's no drop ceiling.
Coming through.
Yeah, it's just, it's an open.
It's very. I don't know, ceiling industrial? Houses,
yeah. Very, kind of? Yeah, it is like, very, like we can see the air conditioning units.
And the electric.
And of course, all of that is metal, and that's been my worry. That's been my concern from the time that we found that out. But that there just wasn't going to be enough.
Apparently, the ductwork, though, has metal, and then it has insulation that makes it not ricochet sound, and then it has metal again.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that works.
I really hope that it's not an issue. Now, they started putting up the sound panels.
Yes.
And it did decrease it by half.
It was, yeah, about a 2.5 to 2 second delay.
We definitely went straight to the superintendent and said, it's not enough. What they're putting up is not going to be enough.
It's not
and then
enough.
Josh just randomly ran into the sound technician one night. Josh likes to go and look at the band hall in the evenings after all the workers have left. And
even if they haven't done anything, I just like walking the space.
Yeah, he just likes being in there.
And dream and about so what it's going to be like.
The sound technician was using our office as his office in the new facility. And Josh got to meet him, and they talked about it more. And
I think they were going to hang, because it's on three walls. And we have like a second story situation with practice rooms. And I said, well, there's no soundproofing or acoustical treatment on this whole wall. And he said, well, we have all these panels left over. Let me see what we can do. And then that's the last we heard of it. And then we went to Midwest.
Right, right. Well, and they keep assuring us that when we get our instrument storage cabinets in there, that is also going to act as a sound treatment.
And I don't want the room, like, super dead.
Well,
I mean, I want it dead-ish.
2 seconds of ring is too long.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't want to have to move into the auditorium to see what it's going to sound like on a stage. But sure. I also don't want it to be, you know, we finish band and 5 minutes later, the music finishes.
Right. You know? So we'll see. Well, we'll keep y'all updated on that.
So we're looking forward to checking out the new space and seeing if they were supposed to be completely finished.
We were supposed to be able to move in two weeks before Christmas. That did not happen.
Well, and then they waited too long to order our instrument storage.
Right, so we're not going to have that for two weeks after we got. Well,
like,
I mean, like when they first approved the bond, you were like, here's the storage we want.
Do this now.
Here's the library we want.
Yeah. And
so they've had it.
Yeah, and the price went up on them. Like it was their fault. The price went up on them. And I was like, see, I told you so. And then they put in for the...
We're not getting our library...
Till the summer.
Yeah, it's a lot longer on that.
Yeah, but we'll go through and tell you every company we use and that kind of stuff. But the instrument storage isn't going to be in until January 17th. And then we'll have it installed the 18th, so they tell me. And then the 20th, we'll be able to use it. And I said, well, listen, if the band hall's ready, we'll make the trek.
Right, it's just going to be like a week and a half that we'll have to.
It's
not that far. It's not that far, though.
No, it's not that far. And the halls are wide and that kind of stuff. So it's fine. But we went down a little rabbit hole there.
Moving hopefully right we'll along. Have videos.
Yes.
All of that to say.
Yes, we're going to start creating videos. We already do some product videos for Premier Music Teaching Aids. Like you can check out our newest one on their website for the Tuner Caddy. And Mark Kasperson came out with a tuner that is a Tuner Caddy tuner.
Right. So
it's you can get it as a bundle. So you get the mic and the tuner and the Tuner Caddy for a much cheaper than you could.
And so and honestly, I think the tuners are better like than them. The tuners they were pushing with them before.
Yeah.
They're a little bit easier to read. And then the Tuner Caddies, if you've had them before, now they've upgraded them
they're
to where
sleeker.
They fit. All of the stands rather than just one.
Even
type.
Like the practice stands, like the little wire.
Right. If you don't use Tuner Caddies, you totally should. Game changer for us last
They're
year.
Great. And it's an investment. I'm not going to lie. It's an investment.
And you can choose. Like we have a classroom set and now we're getting the new ones. So we'll check out Tuner Caddies and tuners to students who want them. But for the most part, we just use them as a classroom set.
Yeah. And they work really
well. But some schools buy them for every single student. Or
they make the students buy them.
They make the students buy them, I guess. Though we provide everything.
Small schools
can do. No.
Because that would be, I mean, that's, you're looking at $50 or somewhere around.
Right.
It gets expensive, to say the least.
But if it's something that you're able to do, highly recommend Tuner Caddies.
It's awesome. It's a needed technological expense. Get those yeah. checks on the T-test for using technology with your grandkids. And that keeps them from having to put their phone out for a tuner.
And for those of you who are not in Texas, T-test is our evaluation system.
It is.
Our teacher evaluation system.
Yes, yes. Although I couldn't tell you the last time I was evaluated.
Well, you're administration now, yes. So I don't think that you have to be evaluated.
And I evaluate Michelle. She's smarter than me, so she always gets the highest marks. So today we're going to talk about how we teach our students to teach themselves. And that is something that I didn't always used to do. I mean, it was
I think I brought it to you, actually.
Yeah, Michelle always has the good ideas.
And something I started at Carthage. One day a week, I would make my students do a test on a line that they had to learn on their own.
On their own, yeah.
And we called it it was the learn it on your own day. And so I would assign the line on a Monday, and then on Thursday, they would have to come back and play it. And it's just, it's my way of making them accountable for learning how to play things without somebody telling them how it goes.
And the trick when you do this is to understand that when you're teaching the process, you're not teaching the line.
Right.
And students, and I've worked in, I don't know, Michelle has too, worked in schools where the students go, how does that go? Tell
right.
me how
can
that goes.
Can you sing that for me?
Yeah. Can you tell me the fingering for this? Can you count the rhythm for this? And
can you play it for me?
Yeah, that's the big one. Ultimately, you want the students to be able to go out after they're done with school or when you're not around and be able to continue their curiosity and get better and play. And if they can't do that, I don't think we as teachers do our jobs.
Correct.
And I've been in programs where rote teaching was the thing.
Just the way it was, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure there's programs out there that are very successful doing it. And there's nothing wrong with it. Don't think I'm going, oh, this is the devil. And there's some times where rote teaching does help.
Sure. We do that occassionally, just depending on the speed that we need to learn something.
Stand trash. I just say, hold on, kids.
For stand trash, period. Anything that we're playing in the stands. And yes. It's not us rote teaching it at this point. It's the other students rote teaching it.
Oh, this is how this little pop tune goes, or this is how this little stand trash, I call it stand trash.
Those little short tunes.
Booty jams.
Yeah.
We've kind of honed it down to a 5-step process.
Right. Well, I think our processes actually differ slightly.
Well, I'm sure they do.
And that's okay, too. I mean, you just have to figure out what works for your kids. I think we say this all the time.
Mm-hmm. And the process changes.
Depending on the group.
Depending on the class or the year. Or I'll go, why did I do it that way? And then I'll go try it some way different. The 5 steps that I use, number one is you want to cut whatever you're trying to learn into manageable chunks.
And we call that chunking it up.
Yeah, we chunk it. And not to be confused with throwing your horn across the
room. Not chuck,
room.
But chunk.
Yes, chunk. And so we talk about chunking it. And so the kids determine, based on the line, how many measures they want to attack at a time. And sometimes when we start out, it's 2. I've had a class where it was 1. It was like...
And again, it just depends on...
The kids
and what they're capable of doing all at once.
And in a class, you'll have some kids that can do 4, some kids that can do a whole line at one time, but that is their chunk. They need to understand that you can always go back to that step.
Yes.
Like if you go, oh, I'm going to do 6 measures, and you get in and you're like, I can't do 6 measures yet. Let's go back and do 4 or do 2. So that's sort of the first step. For me, anyway. The second step is rhythm. And clapping and counting it. That's something to do every day at the start of class. That's what our first video is going to be over, is how we train our kids to clap and count rhythms.
And honestly, they're doing that every single day on their own. Mm-hmm. And so that step is not... And so for me, I don't have them chunk until after they clap and count. Because... they're clapping and counting 4 mm-hmm. measures every day. Well, they can clap the 8 measures. Usually those beginner line.
Oh, there's like
they
one,
repeat
two
anyway.
Rhythms anyway.
Right. Yeah. And so I don't do the chunking until we're we're working on notes and stuff.
And there's sometimes I'll do chunking even at the end, like after we've done the other steps.
Yeah.
Because then we can go, hey, what did we find out? Oh, maybe we don't know as much as we do.
Right.
You know, when we get to the end. It doesn't, chunking can move around. When we're counting our rhythm, every student has to be heard. And I don't go on until I hear every student.
Right.
Like, and if there's so a couple that are just mouthing along.
Kind of the
along,
key to that is, and I'm terrible about this, like, I'll clap and count with them, and then I realize I'm clapping and counting louder than everybody else, and then, okay, well, I'm telling them how it goes. That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
And so I try to not clap and count with them on this step. I try, and when we get to the further steps, I try not to do it with them so that they're having to figure it out on their own.
Well, and that also shows you what they know.
Sure.
Or maybe what we as teachers missed. You know, oh my gosh, I know we talked about whole notes.
Right.
Holy geez.
Why the heck? Why aren't we holding this for four counts?
Like, why are we really, you know, why are we fighting this about? Why is everything a quarter note? Like, right. That's what cracks me up is you can teach, even my high school kids, you can teach high school kids all day long. You think they get it. They go into sight read, and all of a sudden, rhythm goes out the door when they're trying to figure out notes.
First thing to leave, yeah.
We have them clap and count the rhythm, and they then show that they can do that. And then we move on to the next, which is naming the notes. And not necessarily in addition to fingering the notes, which is a separate step.
Well, and see, you separate those two things. But I always want them to move their fingers when they're saying the note name, so they're making those connections. And again, I teach lots of buttons.
Yes.
You teach a few buttons.
I teach three buttons or a slide.
And I think that that's kind of why, for me, it's very, very important that anytime they're saying a note name, they're putting those fingers down at the same time to make those connections.
And also teaching brass players in general, those a lot of times, and this is going to sound really to pigeonhole it, but sometimes those aren't your quickest students. And so now, do I have students that will finger along while we say the names? Yes. I give them that option. They can combine those two steps, but they have to at least say the names of the notes. And if they're just mouthing along and I can't hear them, then we do it again. And I threaten to make them do it by themselves. And mm-hmm. Some kids love to do it by themselves, but not those kids. Those kids don't want to be pointed out. Now, the trick is when you're teaching your beginners and not everybody is pitched the same. For example, our saxophones, our trumpets, and our baritones are all in the same class.
Three different notes at the same time.
And so when we're doing this, and we do this with, this is a great thing to do when like one staff is out, because we had like a whole bout of sickness in our house. And so Michelle was literally the stay-at-home nanny for every single child as they got sick in the family. So that's what I did with the group. And we just took turns. The saxophone said their notes. Everyone fingered. The trumpet said their notes. Everyone fingered. The baritone said their notes. Everyone fingered. We have tried it all together at the same time. That requires...
I did a lot of, like, so when I taught the flutes, clarinets, and saxes all together, mm-hmm. I did a lot of whispering. We're gonna whisper our note names. And so they can hear the people in their section. They might be able to hear another section, but the people directly beside them, they can hear the notes and see if they're like match them. But it's not messing up the whole class. You know, one person's not making it difficult for the whole class. So you just kind of have to figure out what works for you. That,
yeah.
I mean, it was what, 2 years ago was the last time we had them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those kids turned out, they read fine.
Yeah, they read fine.
So.
And if what you're doing is working, then by all means.
Right. Keep doing it. If it's not, try to figure something else out.
Yeah. We adjust all the time. Emergent curriculum is band directing in Beckville, Texas. Like, we are always, oh, this didn't work. How can we make that better so we don't have to stress as bad or work as hard? We get to talking about, so they fingered it. They've said the names of the notes. The last thing is play it.
Play the chunks.
Now, what I do with my brass kids is if we have some students that are not comfortable enough to do that the first time, they can say and finger it along one more time while other people play. I always have those hot shots in the classes that aren't scared to play. And if they make a mistake, if they continue on and they fix it, great. If they don't and everything stops, you address the mistake. You go over that section or that chunk or that measure or half a measure or whatever. Figure out what went wrong, diagnose, and go back again.
And it's always, thank you for playing with a great sound.
Yes.
So I could identify your mistake and help you fix it.
Yes. And that's how we are about counting and saying the names of our notes, because if somebody makes a mistake, and I do this with my high school band, and I know Michelle does it with our junior high band. If you're going to make a mistake, we want you to make it loud enough that we can fix it. We don't want you to try to hide.
And so, you know, you have those students who play real scared when they're playing something new. And so we encourage them to not play scared. Don't be scared to make a mistake.
No.
Everybody's going to make mistakes, but we need to be able to hear you if we're going to fix it so that we can avoid those mistakes in the future.
Yeah. And I would much rather have a kid play out. And now, I used to get really mad when kids did that when I was a young teacher.
Right. Well,
like, because it was a mistake and we can't make mistakes and blah, 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 blah. And it would turn into a lecture and I'd lose half my band time because I'd get on a soapbox.
Yeah.
And I don't really do that.
We all grow.
Now, if it's the week of contest.
Right. Well, that's it's different. It's that whole meme with the, you know, the Rex dinosaur from Toy Story, mm-hmm, and then the T-Rex from Jurassic Park. Yeah. That is definitely me.
I think that's every band director, music teacher, music educator.
Sure.
In the
I try not to be, but man.
Oof. Michelle is very good about being very, like, business with her seventh grade in a rehearsal space. And then she cuts up with them before and after class.
Right.
So, like, meanwhile, in seventh grade,
If I let Josh in front of my seventh grade band, and the next time I'm in front of him, I'm having to reteach him how to do stuff because he's just so goofy with them all the time.
But he
has to be, because that's how he gets them into high school band.
And then I'm the jerk.
Right.
And really, the crazy thing is, I really don't have to be a jerk that often. Now, I don't know what this has to do with teaching our
I know, we
beginners.
Really
we
went
really
off
went
onto
down
a
that.
Yeah,
yeah, we went down. So
it's because you said I did something with my band.
That's what it was.
So anyways, we're talking about how to teach your beginners how to learn to read on their own.
This is pretty much how our day goes, too. If you're ever wondering what a day's like in the Beckville Band Hall, I go down the rabbit hole. Michelle reaches her arm in there, yanks me back out, and sets me
Which
back
is,
where I'm
the
supposed
crazy
to go.
Part about that is I'm the one with ADHD.
Yeah, I think we both have it to some extent. Where we're talking about our beginners, those are the steps that we use. So we chunk it somewhere in there.
Right, yeah.
It,
so just
it
to
doesn't
recap,
matter where you do it.
Just to recap, clap and count.
Yes.
Say the note names.
Number two.
Move the fingers.
Number three.
You can put those two things together like I do. Mm-hmm. And then play it in the chunk.
Yes.
And then as we're learning the whole line, so like we'll do the first two measures, we'll play it. Then we'll go and we'll do that entire sequence of things on the next two measures. And then for me, what I do is I put those four measures together. But you can do it. Like, if you want to wait and put the whole thing together at the end, that's fine. I just feel like it's you're getting the kids playing more if you have them, if you put the chunks together sooner. But it's whatever works for you. Again, like, this is what we do. This is what we found that works. We change some things if we need to, depending on the class. But I would say that our kids, by the end of seventh grade, I think that they're reading music on their own fairly well.
Yes. We've noticed the change since we really focused on making sure they were responsible for their
So the
music.
Sophomore class, this is the first class I think that we were doing this process with.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, those kids were learning their region music on their own without us helping. And we weren't having to make huge fixes on what they had learned on their own.
Well, and
which is a huge change.
And this year, out of our sophomore class, the ones that auditioned for all region, when they played for me, it wasn't a matter of notes and rhythms. It was a matter
right.
of, oh, maybe an accidental that snuck by them or
right.
phrasing
well, and,
or breathing.
Yeah, so
or, you know.
They weren't, and I think the big thing is they weren't scared to tackle that music on their own
no.
because of the process that we had taught them to learn music. So they weren't, again, like how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, that whole,
I always
you know.
Ask, why are you eating an elephant?
Right.
That's
well,
gross.
At any rate, you know that saying. They
I prefer a cake.
Understand that. And so when they look at their region music, they're not going, oh my God, notes. They're looking at it in smaller chunks and they're able to figure it out.
And that really does help. Now, you will have some variants. For example, right before we got out for Christmas, we looked at each other and we said, okay, we've got to do some reading boot camp.
Oh,
we
yeah.
Back.
We're doing literacy boot camp when
yes.
we get back with our sixth graders.
And that entails a lot of note cards, going back to the note cards that
yes.
we started, going back to, we do time fingering tests.
Right.
And we just
didn't really have the time to do it this past fall.
Well, and they were reading pretty well. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, we hit a wall.
Yeah.
And so it, and to be honest, I always assume no kid practice is over Christmas.
Oh yeah.
That's a horrible assumption.
I think you have to though.
But I, when we come back, it's like, all right, let's get the mouthpieces out. Let's get those tuners on the mouthpieces. Let's get a nice big buzz. Let's remember how to breathe. Let's how to check all the boxes.
You probably spend 2 or 3 days just remembering how to make a good sound.
Yeah. Now, every kid takes their horn home.
Yeah, well, we make them.
I would say about 90. Yeah, because the kid will start walking out. I'll go, where are you going?
You don't have your horn in your hand.
I don't have time. You got 3 weeks. You can find 5 minutes in 3 weeks. Take that horn home. We also do various little things to try to get them to practice. Like we do the 12 practice days of Christmas and for extra credit. Like
well, this year it was a little different. We called it the Christmas scavenger hunt.
Yes. Michelle came up with a cooler idea.
And so there's just 12 things and like a little grid.
That they can do.
Yeah. I mean, it's not anything that's outside of the realm of possibility for them.
Because the number one thing you hear over a break is a kid going, I'm bored.
Right.
So now they have something to do.
So you were saying that you assume that no kid practice
yes.
is over.
So I assume that no kid practices. And so that when we come back, we get back into sort of literacy boot camp. So we go back to, okay, these are the first 5 notes. Now, we don't spend a week on it. It's real fast and in a hurry. We do time fingering tests. So the first time I'll give them a fingering test, they will take however much time they need to complete it.
Right, the first time is just showing them how, this is how it is.
This is the process. Now, there's only maybe, 9 or 10 on the fingering
10, 12,
test.
It's not many. So you do have, with the first 5 notes, you have repeats.
Yeah. And then the next time they do it, which is usually a couple days later, they will do it timed, and I'll give them a minute.
Right.
With the ultimate goal being in less than 30 seconds.
Right.
Which for brass players is easy. Woodwinds, they have to color in lots of dots.
Yeah.
That's
a little harder.
But for brass, they have to color in one valve or put a position or, you know, that's easy. And so we should be able to do 9 to 10 in 30 seconds pretty easily. And then we just start adding notes. And over the past 4 years, 5 years, I have created a binder that has fingering tests starting with the first 5 notes and continuing. Usually we're about 10 notes in maybe.
Yeah.
And that's about where we stop. Because by that point, they really don't need it.
I will say the woodwinds do usually have more notes than the brass do.
Yes.
Especially like the flutes and the saxophones, because we do a lot of the octave slur stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I want them to be able to read those slurred notes in addition. Now, clarinets may not. They may be closer to what the brass are doing. It just depends on the class for the clarinets.
Yeah. You just kind of gauge it based on your...
Right.
Based on your kids. And if a kid bombs it, they just redo it the next day.
Yeah.
They have to take it home and correct it, bring it back, and then we give them, I think it's like a 75. Out
yes.
of it. But we do grade them. That is an extra grade in the grade book. And you know, band is a tri-course, so if a kid bombs a fingering quiz,
it's not gonna tank their grade.
We make sure that
we don't put them in as test grades.
No. We have,
in fact, we don't even that. I mean, we don't even put all of our playing tests in as we don't even put all of our playing tests in as test grades.
Sometimes we don't even put all our playing tests in.
That's true. I mean, it just...
I missed a whole sheet. I submitted my grades, and then I was like, wait,
Yeah, but at the same time, like, the kids need that motivation, you know? Mm-hmm. You're going to have a test, but you don't always have to have take a grade on it, you know?
No, not at all.
Especially if they bomb it, like...
Yeah. And sometimes that happens.
They bomb a test. Don't put that in the grade book.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Give them another shot.
5 steps... or 4 steps, however you want to look at it, the steps to success of learning your own line. We try to have them do a learn it on your own line, especially in the spring, once a week.
Yeah, I'll do mine every Thursday. And the kids know Thursday's learn it on your own day.
Yeah, and we'll assign that. I'll do it immediately after we take the test.
I usually tell them on Monday.
So I give my kids the weekend to look at it, because some of them need it.
Something else that I did it when I was at Carthage, because things are a little different in Beckville than they were when I was in Carthage, but every Friday I had like a ton of pass off lines from the beginner book. And so we only used one beginner book at Carthage. I supplemented a lot, but every single student had this book. And so at the very beginning of the year, I told them every single line that was on their pass-off chart, and they just circled them or starred them or whatever. And then every Friday, that would be all we did. We would just pass off lines. And so their goal is to try to pass off every single line in the book. But again, it was learning it on your own. Like, they could, I mean, if they could move ahead and learn stuff that we hadn't learned, that's great. But kind of give them an idea of where they should be by certain times in the year. And if kids, I think I had them chunked into like groups of five. And so if they passed off five lines, then they got to pick something out of the treat bag or whatever. But I think that that was another thing that just really motivated the kids to work harder on their own and figure things out on their own, and just made them better readers overall. It put it more in their hands.
Yes, and that's what you want, is independence. Independence from your students, so that way when they're gone, or you're gone, they're going to be able to take care of themselves. And that's the best gift that we can give those kids. So, there you go. We've hit around it and hit on it, but our approach to beginner independence.
5 steps to literacy success.
There you go. That's what we'll call the episode. Thanks for listening. As always, you can go on to our Facebook page and submit questions if you have them. You can also email us at our email address, which is listed at the end of the podcast. And we look forward to hearing from you. And be on the lookout for our video on how we approach rhythm with our beginners, well, with everybody.
Right, and do it with 7th grade too.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Little Bandology. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at Little Bandology, or email us at littlebandology@gmail.com.